Good morning, everyone. So thank you for the introduction. So I'm going to talk about switchgrass, which we already know that it's a biofuel crop, intercropping with alfalfa, and we think that it will result in reduced greenhouse gas emissions. And this is some of the work that we did at University of Washington in partnership with Washington State University. So as we all know that biofuels are getting very popular, and then the general idea is that biofuels will reduce our reliance on fossil fuels. So one of the popular things about biofuels these days is the cellulosic ethanol, which we can produce using switchgrass. So gone are the days for the corn ethanol. So cellulosic ethanol is getting more popular. But the idea is that even when you grow switchgrass, you have to apply nitrogen fertilizer to get good yields for good ethanol production. But the issue is that when you fertilize, you will have losses, and then generally you will have increased emissions of greenhouse gases. And the figure here shows that, as you can see here, it's a picture from IPCC in 2007, and we already know that agriculture is a big contributor of greenhouse gas. We have about 13.5% of greenhouse emissions from agriculture, so yes, there's a need to be concerned. So we are thinking that a possible alternative could be to grow switchgrass and alfalfa together, because alfalfa has nitrogen-fixing ability, so if we grow them together, we can reduce the nitrogen application rates, and we can save on greenhouse gas emissions. So we will be looking at the impact of switchgrass alfalfa intercropping, because it has not been extensively studied, especially when it comes to biomass yields and then N2O emissions and ultimately the ethanol yields. So we want to look at the big picture, but I will present a smaller picture today. So our objectives were to compare the yields for these biofuel production crops, and I will pretty much compare switchgrass that is fertilized at agronomic rate versus switchgrass that is intercropped with alfalfa with no nitrogen applied. And then our second objective was to compare the nitrous oxide emissions in these fields. And ultimately, we want to determine if there is a greenhouse savings by using this intercropping combination. So there has been previous research about nitrous oxide emissions, and generally speaking, it does vary with the type of soil and the type of crop and amount of nitrogen applied to the soil. But a lot of people use default number that 1.5% of the total nitrogen applied will be emitted as nitrous oxide, but we wanted to look at the actual measurable and nitrous oxide emission numbers, and then ultimately look at the greenhouse gas savings. So this study was done in partnership with WSU, and the experimental station is in Prosser. It's in eastern Washington, about 4 hours from Seattle. And this trial was started in 2010, and it has been ongoing. So we were looking at the switchgrass variety called Kenlo. It's a lowland variety. And this trial has, it's a randomized complete block design. Randomized complete block design with three treatments. There were other treatments, but we were pretty much focusing on switchgrass with no nitrogen applied, switchgrass with agronomic rate of nitrogen applied, which is 220 kilogram nitrogen per hectare per year. And then the other two treatments that we looked at was a combination of 70% switchgrass and 30% alfalfa, and then another combination of 50% switchgrass and 50% alfalfa. And this is the plot design. So we had four replicates, and they were arranged in blocks. And this is one of the pictures of the randomized complete block design. And this is pretty much showing switchgrass, but we have some alfalfa plots here. But this picture shows the combination where we did switchgrass, alfalfa, intercrop together. And then there's another picture that shows closely how they were put in rows. So what we did was we did nitrous oxide measurement, as I previously mentioned. We did it using static chamber approach, and these are our chambers. And the flux was calculated by taking gas at times 0, 10, and 20 minutes, and flux was calculated using Fick's law. And again, we had four replicates, and then we did three chambers per plot, so that we have enough replicates when we calculate a mean. And we brought them, we collected those samples in pre-evacuated tubes, and then we just brought them and analyzed them as soon as we can. But generally speaking, they were analyzed within 2 weeks of collection using a gas chromatograph. So this is some of the N2O emission data, and as you can see, the y-axis shows nitrous oxide N2O nitrogen flux in gram per hectare per day, and then on the x-axis you have the different treatments. So you can clearly see that the fertilized treatments had higher emissions as compared to the no nitrogen and also as compared to the intercropped. So that's a good thing. But another thing that we were interested in knowing was the soil goes through wet cycles and dry cycles depending on when you're irrigating and how often are you irrigating. So we also wanted to see how that would affect. So same plots, same kind of plot, nitrous oxide, and then we have different treatments. And generally speaking, you can see that the red boxes are the dry gas samples and the wet are the samples collected just after irrigation. So generally speaking, in all the treatments, we had higher N2O emissions when the plots were wet and then lower emissions when the plots were dry. So that's kind of intuitive, but we wanted to see just to confirm. And again, generally speaking, we had lower emissions in the control plots and low emissions in the intercrop plots. So as I mentioned previously, that we are interested in calculating greenhouse gas savings. So the first factor that I looked at was the greenhouse emissions from nitrogen fertilizer production. So in the next few slides, you will see on the left side, you will see the switchgrass monocrop that is fertilized, and then on the right side, you will see switchgrass intercrop with alfalfa. So I will start from here. We applied 220 kilograms of ammonical nitrogen per year, and if you calculate the CO2 equivalent based on the nitrogen application, you get about 880 kilograms of CO2 equivalents. And it is based on this formula, because this is pretty much established that when you produce 1 kg of ammonical nitrogen fertilizer, you release about 4 kilograms of CO2 equivalents. Whereas in case of intercropping, you do not add anything, so you pretty much end up with 0 kilogram of CO2 equivalents. But this is only talking about the fertilizer production part. The second part that I looked at was the nitrogen fertilizer. When the nitrogen fertilizer is applied, then you also get N2O emissions. And these are based on our measured numbers. So again, on the left side, we look at the switchgrass monocrop treatment, which is fertilized. And the cumulative N2O flux throughout the season was about 19.1 gram per hectare per day. Whereas in case of switchgrass intercrop with alfalfa, and I'm mostly talking about the 70-30 treatment, because we will just go one at a time. So this is based on the N2 emissions in the 70% switchgrass and 30% alfalfa. So we came up with this cumulative N2 emission number of about 5. And again, you can convert the N2O equivalents to CO2 equivalents. So again, you can see that you get about 5 kilogram here and then 1.5 kilogram in case of intercrop treatment. So with regard to biomass yields, I'm showing the data for 2013 only, but we have data for 2012 and also 2014. So we will have, in the end, we will have 3 years worth of data. You can clearly see that when you apply no nitrogen, the yields are pretty small. Whereas when the fertilizer, the agronomic rate of fertilizer is applied, you get very high yields. But it's kind of interesting that the switchgrass alfalfa combination falls in between the no nitrogen and the agronomic nitrogen. Another interesting thing was that the 70-30 switchgrass alfalfa treatment, the yields are not different from the fertilized treatment. It is smaller, but it is not statistically different. We also sent our switchgrass and switchgrass alfalfa samples for sugar content analyses, because ultimately you want to convert the sugar into ethanol, so we will get ethanol yields in the end. But at this point, we were only able to get sugar numbers, but that's the idea, that ultimately you will get the ethanol yield numbers. And again, as you can see, total sugar content, they were not different between the two treatments, so I think that's a good thing, that even if you have switchgrass alfalfa or switchgrass alone, you will still get, I would expect that if the sugar content is the same, using all the assumptions, you will get similar ethanol yields, but we don't know yet. And this is just a preliminary estimate that I did based on the biomass yield that we have collected, and then I just say that it's an estimated ethanol yield because I took this number from one of the previously published references. And using these numbers, the yields were different. The fertilizer one has a yield of about 391 and then 364 for the intercrop. But in the end, also, you come up with a high yield for the fertilized treatment, and the yield difference was about 43%. But I would argue that these ethanol yields are still estimated. Based on the sugar content, I would expect that the ethanol yield over here would be similar. So in the end, the biomass yield for the crops would play a big role when we calculate the ethanol yields. So these are not conclusions because we are still in our preliminary phase. So generally speaking, we can say that there are smaller greenhouse gas emissions when switchgrass and alfalfa are intercropped, but you have higher yield in the fertilized treatments when switchgrass is monocropped. But how do they balance? We still need to complete the ethanol yield estimation. And again, just the take-home message that when you grow switchgrass, monocrop with agronomic rates, you get higher biomass yields, you get higher nitrous oxide emissions, and if you grow switchgrass and alfalfa together, the emissions are lower because there's no emissions due to fertilizer production. You get lower emissions due to fertilizer use, this same sugar content. So I guess the big question is that if you are able to get switchgrass alfalfa yields, biomass yields higher through the years, then they can balance. So we can save the greenhouse gas emissions by growing switchgrass alfalfa together. We can still get the same biomass yields and same ethanol production, but this is still a statement. We cannot conclude anything yet. But in future, we want to use the 3 years worth of data, and then we would also want to use the ethanol yields, the measured yields, and do a recalculation. But I want to thank the Department of Energy for funding our project, and then people at UW and WSU for helping me through this. And this is a picture of the waterfront in Seattle. Thank you so much for your attention. Yes?
Did you calculate the emissions on a biomass basis so that you get an intensity comparison?
We would like to, but I have not done that yet.
If you do that, you might find that the fertilized treatment is superior on a biomass basis.
I would like to do that.
The next question was, how do you arrive at the fertilizer nitrogen rate you selected for comparison? Have you already done a service response study to know that the most agronomically appropriate rate?
Yes. So the studies that are done at WSU, they have been doing this for a long time, and they have published. I'm new to this, but they have published papers. So if you find Steve Frenson's name, they have established that's like the agronomic rate of 200 kg per hectare per year. Yeah, but thank you. Yes?
How frequently did you measure N2O emissions in the rest of the water? Did you measure them each week?
No. So one of the downsides for our plots was that they are 4 hours away from Seattle. So we would roughly do either twice monthly or once in a month. But one thing that we were trying to make sure was we were there when the sprinklers were running, and we would start sampling when the sprinklers are off. So we were trying to get actual wet measurement, and I think we were able to see a difference. But we have 3 years worth of data, and I'm only presenting 1 year. So I'm pretty confident then that there will be a difference between dry and wet.
Yeah, but when you accumulate those between the amount of wet period and the amount of dry period, do you have more dry periods?
We have more dry periods,
so
yes.
Maybe you overestimate.
Yes, that's a really good point, because in the overall assessment, when I do the whole picture, I would take the amount of dry days and amount of wet days, and then I will calculate the cumulative, because this is not the exact way to do it. So we will take into account the dry and the wet. That's the idea.
Okay, thank you very much. And with this, we will go.